Some of what we've been doing here is navigating this hybrid retreat that we're doing. We have this iPad up here, and I can see a lot of people who are sitting this retreat with us, who are in their own homes, wherever they are. Lovely to see you all. Hi, I'll wave up there. I see you here, but... and there was just a little confusion about the camera and how things were oriented. Hopefully this will all kind of get more stable as we go. But I think there are, well, there's more than 100 people also sitting this retreat at home, which is kind of lovely. And welcome to you all at home to our meditation hall, this gathering of those of us here in person and those of us spread throughout, I don't know how far throughout, but
the world.
So we really have a kind of expanded feeling of the meditation hall here. So welcome everyone to the hall, and we'll start with about 10 minutes sitting, just to kind of all arrive here. So a few logistics at the start here. First thing I want to check is the audio, the volume here in the room. Is it okay? It's okay, or we should be louder. It's okay. Okay. And then for those of you online, is the volume okay? Can you hear okay? I'm seeing some thumbs up. Okay, great. And then we have a few practical things for settling in here at the center. We want you to feel like you can settle in, and your sitting space feels comfortable and workable for you. And so we have all of the equipment, all of the meditation equipment, which you're welcome to use, and adjust heights and things like that. And then those of you who are in chairs, you're welcome to substitute a chair in here. It's not that I think we can't probably bring too many chairs in, but if you are sitting in a chair and would prefer to sit in a different chair, like one of the black folding chairs, for instance, there's a few of those in the fire closet just next to the drinking fountain out there. You can bring one of those in instead. Or if you like those turquoise chairs from the downstairs, you can bring one of those up. And then the hearing assistive devices are out in the foyer if you need one of those. You can clip them to, there's some hooks on the side of the chair. You can clip them to that so they don't fall down, or clip them to your clothes. And then we have these black footrests here. I love these things. So those of you who are sitting in chairs, you might find these useful. They're kind of very firm foam, and they're great for standing meditation too, actually, if you find the floor a little too hard. So these both keep your feet warm and can elevate your feet to a good height for the chair, which is what they do for me. And those are also out in the foyer. And then we want to check in with those of you who are here to just make sure you have what you need. Any logistical questions you have about being here at IRC? I know many of you have been here before, but I know there are a few who are new. So just to check in about that briefly. Okay. And there's always a note to the managers if you need something. Any more logistics, Gil? Thank you.
Evening, I want to give bell instructions. I'll do it at the end.
Okay. Sitting here in this hall, I've done this so many times. Been here, and it's always a new experience. Being present with you all. It's quite a thing we're embarking on. It requires a lot of commitment, dedication, and yet also a lot of lightness. This path is one of deeply seeing into our hearts and minds and really understanding how suffering comes to be. But there is also a lot of joy, ease, curiosity, happiness that is possible. Even in the midst of seeing something challenging. So most of you who have been here on retreats at IRC know we have a theme for most of our retreats here. And the theme for this retreat is the five faculties, which is a set of qualities that are really kind of the foundational supports for what we do. They're the kind of foundation that our practice grows from, the foundation of qualities of mind that allow us to meet our experience, both with this curiosity and interest and this lightness of heart. To understand and see what's going on in here. Why are we struggling? How can we become more at ease, more at peace, free of our habitual tendencies towards craving, aversion, delusion. So these five faculties, just to name them right now, are usually begins with confidence or faith, energy, mindfulness, concentration, and wisdom. That's the usual order that they're described in the texts. I'm going to go through each one briefly here. But to me, it kind of makes sense in a way to point to wisdom at the beginning, rather than waiting to the end, because faith, the first one, typically the first one, it's not just faith in some random thing. What is it faith in? It's really faith in the wisdom that the Buddha offered us, the teachings, the practice that he offered us. And so to me, it makes sense to orient us a little bit towards wisdom to start. The wisdom of the Buddha is a wisdom that is pointing to both the possibility of freedom and a path that leads us to that freedom. Some classic ways it's described, the Four Noble Truths, that there is suffering. We experience suffering, and the Buddha encouraged us to understand it. Understand suffering. This is his enjoinder to us. Understand it. That understanding helps us to see this second noble truth, that when craving arises, suffering arises. And his enjoinder about this one is to let go of the craving. Now that's easier said than done. But that's a lot of what our practice is. I think these first two are really kind of the field of our, of a lot of what we practice with. We bring our curiosity, our awareness, our mindfulness to understand suffering and to see how suffering arises. And that process begins to support this letting go. And that this letting go of suffering, this letting go of the craving, creates the conditions. It allows that letting go, that release of craving is freedom. This is the third noble truth. Freedom to be realized. And all of this, to all of this, there is a path, the fourth noble truth. And we're encouraged to cultivate the path. So wisdom, this teaching of the Four Noble Truths, there's some other ways to kind of come into thinking about wisdom. There's recognizing and understanding skillful and unskillful mind states that lead onward. When mind states are unskillful, rooted in greed, aversion, and delusion, they tend us to act in unskillful ways, and they reinforce unskillful habits and patterns. They keep that pattern going in our hearts and minds, and those patterns are bound up with suffering. Skillful, wholesome mind states, states based in non-greed, non-aversion, non-delusion, states, or in the more positive language, wisdom, joy, kindness, love, patience, curiosity, mindfulness, concentration, a lot of wholesome qualities that support the practice. These we see as we cultivate these, that the mind begins to move in a direction that it can let go of suffering. It can take that action on that second noble truth. So wisdom, we hear this, and you've all heard something like this before, you wouldn't be here. Something that has motivated you to come to a retreat. But we had to hear something first. Something that touched our hearts. Something that made us say, yeah, maybe there is a different way. For me, this was huge for me to hear the possibility of some different way to engage with my mind. And so it touches our hearts, this wisdom. We hear it. We reflect on it. Two aspects of wisdom. And it may motivate us. It may, we may get a sense of a little bit of a sense of maybe I could do this. I think one of the most wonderful things about the Buddhist teachings is it's not only has this wisdom that points out the possibility of freedom and how our minds do all of this, but it also offers us a path. It offers us tools. It offers us practices, ways to engage to, in order to see this and understand it for ourselves, to see this wisdom and understand it for ourselves. But at first, we take in this wisdom. We think about it, perhaps. We reflect on it. And for all of us here and out in the world, listening online, all of us have had some sense of, yes, this is possible for me. And that is the experience of confidence, the experience of faith, a sense of touching into that possibility that the classic definition of faith is faith in the Buddha, his awakening, that he did awaken, faith in the Dharma, the teachings that he offered, the wisdom teachings and the practices he offered that can show us that those that truth, that understanding directly for ourselves so that our minds will let go of suffering. And faith in the Sangha, the community of practitioners that support us to practice. So this Sangha that we have, it's a classic definition of faith in the Buddhist teachings. But practically, to me, there's ways it feels. It's not an intellectual thing. It feels like a yes. I want to do this. I'm willing, even if it's just I'm willing to do this. That's what it was for me, actually, at the beginning. I didn't really understand the wisdom teachings of the Buddha. I mean, like, I read this book and it said, you know, try observing your anger rather than doing anything with it. And it's like, what good is that going to do? I couldn't understand, but I was willing to try. Partly because I was pretty destroyed by my anger. It was like kind of hit bottom, nothing else to do. I might as well try this. And very quickly, the confidence, that willingness to engage, just a willingness, became an understanding of how it's helpful, how it's useful. And so there was a much stronger sense of not only I'm willing, I want to do this. There's an inspiration, a connection with, yes, this works. I want to keep going. Well, that's confidence. And you all have it because you're here or you're in front of your computers at home. You all have this. Sometimes we feel it and sometimes we don't so much. But you might just every now and then, because all of these qualities, these five faculties, they are qualities of mind that are not like just hypothetical. They can be experienced. So what is your experience of confidence, of faith, of your willingness to engage, or more than a willingness, a sense of, yes, this is something I want to do, and it's supportive. A sense of that. A real sense of confidence. What is that feeling for you when you connect to the practice? And it's not always there. Sometimes it feels like it's far away. But when it is there, notice it. Because noticing these wholesome qualities is one of the key ways that we nurture them. So if you can notice that sense of, yes, I can do this, that will nurture that quality itself. And so this willingness to engage, the willingness to step into the practice, creates or inspires an energy to actually do the practice. This is the next faculty, energy. Energy directed towards the practice. Energy is a kind of a neutral quality in and of itself. But again, here it's going to be, it can be informed, and in the path of practice, it is informed by wisdom. Wisdom really underpins all of these faculties. And so we aim our energy at the practice. There are some teachings that support this. The teaching on the four wise efforts is a teaching that one beautiful description of how energy and effort connect is that it is said that energy is what results from the four wise efforts. So the four wise efforts are supports for cultivating and maintaining the wholesome qualities and letting go of and letting go of the unwholesome qualities. So we look in our minds, we explore, we open to what's here, and when wholesome qualities are arising, we encourage them, we nurture them. When unwholesome qualities are arising, one of the main things we do with them there is to use mindfulness with them, to become aware of them, because that practice of becoming aware of the unwholesome qualities, like the thing I learned very early on around what good does it do to watch anger, is it creates the conditions for it to weaken. We understand something about it as suffering. That was a shock for me when I first really started looking at anger. You know, I was good at being angry. I had a lot of it. And but the first time I really felt it, it was shocking that, wow, this really hurts. Why do this? We do it because we think we're getting something out of it. You know, we think we're, I thought I was making the other person miserable. That was enough for me until I started feeling it. So that turning the attention, the curiosity, what is this experience of anger, gave me the direct, visceral experience. This is suffering. And that was the beginning of understanding it. So the wisdom comes in. Making the effort towards being present with these challenging mind states. So this effort, this energy towards cultivating the skillful, abandoning, letting go of the unskillful. We are using mindfulness in this process. And we're cultivating mindfulness, this next faculty. Mindfulness has this simple capacity of our minds to know what's happening while it's happening, to be aware in the present moment. And again, it needs to be connected or aimed at an understanding. I mean, we could envision, for instance, a thief in someone's home whose purpose in there is to steal things, being very, very aware of what they're doing moment after moment, knowing, moving quietly through the house so they're not caught. But their aim at that being present in the moment is not to simply understand what is it like to be present in the moment while I'm doing this. It is to steal something. So the motivation or the purpose behind using that capacity to be present, to be aware in the present moment, it's not aimed at wisdom. It's aimed at greed. And so it's important what we aim our mindfulness at. And the teachings of the Buddha here are just so simple. It just seems almost like nothing, right? I mean, he says, the teachings of mindfulness encourage us to notice what's happening in the present moment while it's happening as a present moment experience. It sounds like nothing. I mean, why would that do anything? But what it does is it shows us what's happening in our experience in the moment. If that thief were to actually turn to what does it feel like to be here in this moment with this mind state of greed, that person would feel the suffering of that, the tightness of that. So the mindfulness is a support, this mindfulness directed towards understanding suffering and come back to that wisdom. That's the kind of the key. Mindfulness directed to understanding suffering, to letting go of the arising of suffering with craving, to realizing the ending of suffering, and to cultivate the path, to cultivate the qualities that support us on this journey. So mindfulness is directed to our experience in the present moment, to our body, to feelings, to emotions, to our mind states. And we are curious. We begin to get curious through the teachings of the Buddha about how suffering comes to be. Energy and mindfulness together, these two together, that kind of energy directing our minds towards the practice and cultivating that quality of mindfulness, these two together cultivate a stability of mindfulness moment after moment. And this is the cultivation of concentration, this next faculty. This stability of mindfulness, when mindfulness becomes more present, it's not coming and going, but it's more stable. We're able to be with what's happening moment after moment with this perspective of curiosity about how does suffering arise? What leads to the ending of suffering? This stability of mindfulness is like, it's like a really sharp knife. It's like mindfulness gets really sharp, really clear. So concentration kind of hones the mindfulness to allow us to see and understand much more clearly. A concentration can be this kind of one-pointed concentration. We often think of that when we hear the word concentration, of aiming at one thing. And that's one way concentration works, but also there's another form of concentration that's just a stability of mindfulness, a non-distraction of mind. It's available for whatever's arising in the present moment, moment after moment, maybe a lot of changing experience. So this, too, aware, not distracted, aware moment after moment, this is one way that we really begin to see. We begin to see a lot of things with this kind of concentrated mindfulness. It is seeing a lot of changing experience. We see the truth of change. We see how things are conditioned. We see the truths that the Buddha pointed to. We also begin to understand how our experience, because we see the impermanent, just like really radically changing nature of our experience, we begin to see there isn't what we thought of as me, as who I am. It's not what I thought. And so this concentration begins to directly help us to see the wisdom that the Buddha taught. And just back to that first faculty that we talked about. So we will unpack these more over the course of the week. My wish is that you have the confidence and that this is possible, and that the engagement brings you a stability of mind that allows you to open to the wisdom of the Buddha. And so David is going to talk a little bit more about, at first, about the confidence piece, the confidence in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha, in a way, and then the precepts.
So as we begin the retreat, we join together in a few ritual activities that open a field for engaging with the teachings that Andrea has outlined. Paying our respects to the Buddha, naming our shared inspiration, recognizing shared intentions, and also committing to certain behaviors, certain ethical practices that create a container, safe container for our engagement with these teachings. So first, homage to the Buddha. The words in Pali, Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa, mean, I pay homage to the Buddha, the fully self-awakened one. And with this, we recognize the first teacher and the first practitioner of this ancient tradition. And if you don't know the chants, others around you will. And we chant each of these three times. And by the third time, you'll know some of it. And by the third retreat, you'll know it all. So we say, Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa. We follow this by chanting the refuges. We take refuge in the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha, each in turn, each three times. You can think of this as taking refuge in the Buddha, but as Andrea has pointed to, also taking refuge in the possibility of being more awake in the world, more fully alive and present for ourselves, for others, for our experience of the world. We take refuge in the teachings, the Buddha's understanding of how suffering arises, how we can be free, and in the Sangha, the long line of people who come before us awakened in the Buddhist teachings, and at the same time in this little community of practice here, this unique gathering of shared experience this week. In each of these we say, Buddham Saranam Gacchami, or some variation of that. The word order is reversed. I like to know what I'm chanting when I chant it. This is why I share that with those of you who may not know. Buddham Saranam Gacchami, in the Buddha, or to the Buddha, for refuge I go. And then Dhamma and Sangha as well. So again, follow along with the chanting of those around you, and it'll come to be familiar. Buddham Saranam Gacchami, Dhamman Saranam Gacchami, Sangham Saranam Gacchami, Dutiyampi Buddham Saranam Gacchami, Dutiyampi Dhammam Saranam Gacchami, Dutiyampi Sangham Saranam Gacchami, Tatiyampi Buddham Saranam Gacchami, Tatiyampi Dhammam Saranam Gacchami, Tatiyampi Sangham Saranam Gacchami. And finally, we recite a series of five precepts that we commit to as part of this community for this week of practice. And these will do sort of call and response. I'm basically holding the Pali phrases in mind and coming up with what comes up here. So for the purposes of our practice together this week, I undertake the precept to abstain from causing harm to any living being, to support our practice this week. I undertake the training rule of abstaining from taking anything not freely given. To support our practice this week, I undertake to abstain from sexual activity. To support our practice this week, I undertake the precept to abstain from unskillful speech. And to support our practice together this week, I undertake the training rule to abstain from substances that intoxicate and cause heedlessness. Thank you. The refuges and precepts have been taken and recited. Back to you, Andrea.
I wanted to say a few practical things. Some of you, just let you know that we'll start having one-on-one meetings with the teachers on Tuesday. And tomorrow at some point, we'll announce how that works. There's a sign-up system that'll become clear tomorrow. And I want to talk a little bit about ringing this bell up here. Those of you who are going to be practice leaders up here. And I did this last retreat. I think it's a good idea to give some instructions. So those of you who are going to ring, sit up being practice leaders, you either sit here where I am or where David is. And the bell that's, will mostly be living here on the corner over here to my left. But if you have to move it, you have to be aware that because of Zoom, you see, there's a wire that's actually kind of sewn into the pillow here. And so you can't just yank it. And so you have to move it carefully and kind of move it around the back of this. If you have, yeah. Oh, it just goes this way. Anyway, you make sure no one's sitting here when you try to move it. And the reason for this is that there's a Zoom is makes a difficult to hear bell sounds, and so you have to turn the original sound on, but that's a kind of a hassle. So there's now a whole program in somewhere deep in the bowels of where I'm sitting. There's a program that kind of hears the bell sound and immediately switches it over to the original sound. And then when it doesn't hear, it immediately turns it back. And so it's a real convenience for us. But it means we have all this wires and stuff. So the hitting the bell, you don't want to hit it. You don't want to strike it. You want to kiss it. But to kiss it really nice, you have to start with how you hold the little stick. You don't grab it like this, because when you grab it, there's very little possibility for a nice resonance as it touches the bell. You want to just kind of gently hold it between two fingers, your thumb and your index finger, pointing finger. And you, so that you can kind of like, it kind of like, and so lightly, you don't want to grab it really hard, just so lightly it kind of dangles in your fingers and kind of goes back and forth, kind of gently, lightly. And all this is so that when you hit the bell, when you kiss the bell, you want to just graze the bell. So you don't come straight down like this. That's not a good way to end meditation. And the way you can graze it, if you really want to get into the fine points of all this, is you approach it in an arc. See, I'm really exaggerating here, but a big arc like this. You see that? So, and as you do this arc, you let the the striker to fall, kind of slide down or fall, kind of the top of the striker, kind of fall into this corner, the right there edge, as you're lifting it up and pulling it away. So it just kind of grazes. Isn't that nice? Those are the options. So, and some people don't do the edge here, they go on the side. But so you're almost, by the time that the striker is falling against the bell, you're already pulling it away, the hand away. So it just barely has a chance to hit it and then comes away, and that allows it to reverberate the most nicely here. Some people will do it like this. So you're dangling it upside down, the striker, and do the inside edge here. So that makes a little different sound, but that's also possible. And that's a little bit easier if you're sitting up here like this, because you're above it, so it's a little bit easier to kind of do it in the mouth of the bell, as opposed to coming. And when I do it like this, when I'm here, then it's kind of like, then it's rather than going an arc this way, it's an arc that's parallel to the floor this way. So if you've never done this before, I'd recommend that you come and ring the bell, maybe when we leave now, or maybe before we go to breakfast, before breakfast or something, when probably no one's here after Sangha service. And just try it a little bit. And part of the reason to do it, and reason to make this big little demonstration here, is to try. People who have never rang this bell before will inevitably think they're hitting it lightly, and for some other purposes, it is a light strike, but it's a big clang, and you kind of can't undo that. But if you do it, if you do it too softly. If it's just, it's maybe, I don't know if that's too soft, but that's something, and people can't hear it, you can always undo that or redo that. Do it louder. So, and I hope, I've rung a lot of bells, and it's really a pleasure. And it's been kind of a very nice part of the mindfulness practice in the monastery was just you and the bell, and, just this care and love, and to have this wonderful kissing relationship with the bell. It's the only sexual contact you're allowed. Am I in trouble? And one more announcement is that tomorrow morning there's this what we call Sangha service, when we're all working together and taking care of the center. And if you're new here and have a new job that you haven't done before, the managers, Lydia and Elizabeth, will be kind of circulating, walking around, and they'll be looking to see if anyone has any questions or needs to know where there are tools or supplies. So just you don't have to go looking for them. I think they'll eventually find you. And that would be walking around.
I guess I'll just say, after all that excitement of bell ringing, just remember to be here. And we are ending a little early this evening. Well, this is an opportunity to let you rest here. It's a lot of energy to get to a retreat. And so there's a little bit of a longer evening tonight for you to settle in, get some rest. And of course, if you do have energy, the hall is open. And you're welcome to come at any time to sit in the hall. And I think the computer is also always open. Those of you online, there's always the meditation hall available. And so you're welcome to come and sit. And you're also welcome to take your rest, if that is what is appropriate for you.